welcome to this edition of, I don't know, what's this? Let's call this Uncovered for now anyway. Anyway, I'm Jared Kimber. This is my podcast. I talk about cricket, and that's what I'm doing right now. I wanted to talk about umpires, and I wanted to talk specifically about something that I just saw in the news very recently, and I don't think it's got much coverage yet, but it's very interesting. And to do that, I want to go back in time a little bit. Those of you who follow my videos might have seen that one of the biggest videos we ever made was about something that we called the zombie ball, which is essentially a situation that is created by modern cricket by the fact that if you bowl a waist-high full toss, the umpires don't always call them automatically. They quite often wait to see the footage afterwards. And because of that, you might have a situation where a player is caught off that no ball, thinks they're out, but the other team thinks it's going to be called a no ball and tries to run them out. I thought it was a very interesting topic. And so I went to the ICC to say, look, is this something you've seen much before? Is there regulation? Do the umpires need to be trained differently? You know, what can be done here? And I was told, as I've been told many, many times before, the ICC does not talk about umpiring decisions. It's not the first time I heard that. The most famous one would be the 2019 World Cup when I was working for Crick Info. And the overthrows incident happened. I was commentating the end of that game, so I didn't have the law book in front of me. But afterwards, I was contacted on Twitter by many umpires saying, something's gone wrong here. We looked up the laws and we're like, oh, maybe there's a mistake. We went to the ICC and we said, look, we think there was a mistake in the way that the overthrows were calculated. Here's why. And they said, well, the game's over now. We're like, no, we understand that, of course. But like, there was a mistake made. Could you explain what happened? Did the umpires just not know? Did they, you know, look at it differently than we looked at it? Whatever. The umpires, we don't talk about umpires, was the basic response that I got again on that day. And the issue there was that that was a story that wasn't going to go away. Unlike the zombie ball, which did actually die, I suppose, eventually. The overthrows incident obviously got bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually the ICC did have to talk about it. And there are many sports around the world that handle these things much better than you see in cricket at the moment. Whereas in cricket, it's like we've gone from blaming the umpires for everything in the, 70s and 80s into the 90s to not being able to talk about them at all. As you would expect, both of these extremes make almost no sense at all. It's not the way these things should be done. So I was watching a women's 100 game the other day, and there was a mistake by Nigel Long where right towards the end of the game, the bowling team had a good chance of stealing a game that they probably should have lost. There was a waist-high full toss that was bowled, but it was partly delivered because the batter had run down the wicket as fast as she could, and she'd got 2-3 metres down the crease. And so when it hit her, it was definitely above her waist. It hit her bat. Quite clearly, if she was back in her crease, it was probably going to be below the waist. But also, she had forced the issue. The correct decision in that one would have been for Nigel Long to be like, look, it's very hard for me to tell what is going to happen here. Yes, the ball's on the trajectory on the way down, but it was above the waist at the time. However, if the batter was standing in the crease, we would have a better idea. But because she's not, and we don't have the technology to actually use Hawkeye and do everything else, we're going to make a very obvious decision. I would say about 80 to 85% of people watching that would have just said no ball. Nigel Long gives it as a no ball. It's a women's hundreds game. It's not the most important thing that has happened in cricket. It's not an India men's game. It's not a World Cup final or anything like that. However, because of that, the team, one team was more likely to go to the finals and one team was less likely to go to the finals. Like, it was a very important game for those franchises and a very important game for the players playing in it. And again, there's no comment about it. There's no talk. We get a little bit about Mark Butcher talking about it on the TV afterwards, and that's about it. And the issue here is that Nigel Long is a very highly rated umpire. He has been an elite panel umpire. I'm not sure if he's currently on the elite panel or not. But over time, he's been thought about as one of the best international umpires. Here he's made what I would say is a mistake. And I think that if you could go through it logically, and I'm not talking about whether you thought it was above the waist or anything, but if you go through it logically, it'd be very hard to give this as a no ball. Right, there's an instinctive part of it, which is that's a dangerous ball and we want to protect the batter, which is why that law exists. And we're all happy with that law and it's very clever. But the other part of it is if a batter runs down the crease, they kind of take away the, what would you call it? the fairness of the bowler. Like the bowler bowling a slow ball, quite often if you run 3 or 4 meters down the crease, it's going to be very high. So you're making it look worse. But all of this comes about, you know, these sorts of things that have come up in my career again and again, where it's quite clear that an umpire has made an error. What happens next? And I work in cricket, and I can't exactly tell you. I do know that there are key decisions that are sometimes looked at. I know that there is, especially at the top level of men's cricket, and probably now also coming into women's cricket, you know, looking at Hawkeye data to be able to have a look at what kind of decisions that umpires make. You know, do they regularly make the same kinds of mistakes? Are they making more errors than other umpires? But a lot of umpiring still seems to be very subjective, right? And I'm not sure that necessarily that is the best way of doing it. The second way is it's subjective, but then who's making these subjective calls, right? Who are the people actually making the decisions on whether umpires should go up or should go down? How open are they to it? And why do we keep seeing the same umpires who, to our eyes as outsiders, keep making the same errors over and over again? And I think a lot of this comes down to that sort of period in cricket when we went to the neutral umpires. Having neutral umpires and then having elite panel umpires didn't actually solve any of the major problems of umpiring, but it did do a couple of really, really interesting things. Having neutral umpires took the steam out of the arguments, right? Like at that stage, you could certainly say that bigger teams get better calls than smaller teams, which is pretty much consistent right across all sports because of fan bases and because of pressure and all these sorts of things. But outside of that, you know, you have umpires from all around the world. They might be good umpires or bad umpires, but they're giving their decisions based on, you know, their umpiring skills. So the neutral umpires, I think, took the steam out of that. But that was one, that was almost at a point that the old umpiring system before neutral umpires were hired by the boards, which is a bit of a problem to begin with. But then secondly, they weren't really full-time professional umpires. They weren't umpiring in multi-games outside of perhaps a system like county cricket where there was a lot more cricket to umpire in. So you had people umpiring in test matches who didn't actually umpire that much top-level cricket, right? So the neutral system worked, but it also worked more on that elite system where suddenly what we had for the first time was, you know, 10 or 12 umpires traveling the world and regularly umpiring international cricket, understanding what was going on in that. And then on top of that, umpiring got a lot better in that era because you suddenly had this other influx of technology available. So umpires, even all the way down to club umpires, were trained up based on what they saw on TV. You know, suddenly not every ball was missing a leg stump as it was in the 1980s, right? Suddenly quick bowlers couldn't just get away with hitting the ball above the batter's knee roll and getting LBWs automatically with a new ball anymore. Spinners started to get LBWs over and over again, just based on the fact we now understood that the ball actually wasn't going to bounce that high and the majority of spin deliveries were probably going to hit the stumps or go near the stump. So the whole game was changed. So we actually see a huge difference in umpiring from the mid-90s through to probably 2005, and that goes on. But this is the issue that sort of, I think we're at that next level now, of which we still don't really think about umpiring in all sports, I would say, but certainly in cricket, as something that is form dependent, right? It's something that is technical, something that is trainable, improvable, that people can get better at, that people can get worse at, right? I don't understand why there's a difference between the way we select umpires and the way we select players. Players have to go through, you know, rigorous training. They have to perform at a certain level. Yes, some are picked based on what they might do in the future, and all that sort of thing. But it doesn't really seem to be as rigorous a system when it comes to international umpires at this time. And the reason that this, you know, the Nigel Long thing came to my mind this week was because at the same time, we saw Cricket Australia actually announce that their umpiring would now reflect how they chose players, essentially based on merit and not schedule. So I don't think it will be the amount of games that you will get picked for, although there's a very good chance of that happening as well. But it's more about the fact that if there are beforehand, they would basically just schedule out so many games of the years to all the different umpires who are available. And then the next year they would do a similar thing. And what Cricket Australia are now saying is, if there is one game where there are two teams who cannot win the Sheffield Shield final, And there is another game where two teams are playing off to make it to the Sheffield Shield final. We want our best umpires there. And we are rating our umpires and we are choosing them for the biggest games based on their performance. That's a small step towards umpiring should be. If you are following my work, we know that you are a true cricket sadist and you need your hit every day. And sometimes, sadly, there is actually no cricket to watch. So how about if someone made a very fun game that you could use for the moments when there is no on-field action? Welcome to Hit Wicket, a strategic game of cricket, which isn't about slamming your finger on the screen very fast. You work out what works best based on how cricket actually works. Dot balls lead to wickets, ones and twos to fours and sixes. So there is no way you can bowl a great Yorker every ball or smash three sixes at the beginning of your innings. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some gaming powers in there as well. Hit Wicket is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, and captain. It's your dream. No ads, just cricket. So download Hit Wicket today, because this is a cricket game made for you and supported by major cricket nerds. Now, there is an element of this within the ICC elite umpiring structure already. But the problem with the ICC elite umpiring structure, as well as I know it, and I don't know it that well, because they don't really fully explain this system, of course. And when you ask about umpiring, you don't really get any good answers. So if anyone from the ICC wants to come on and correct any of this, more than happy to have them here, because I think it's a really interesting thing. But the point being, at the moment, I've always found that the elite umpiring system is kind of has the worst of both worlds. What it does is it's really hard to be an elite umpire. They get paid a very good salary, but they are on the road all the way through the year. And it's very hard to get noticed as a domestic umpire or an occasional international umpire at a level where you can end up being an elite umpire. And so we have so few umpires in our elite level. Because of that, it's impossible to get into it, but it's also seemingly impossible to get out of it. I haven't seen the stats on all the umpires, but I have seen some stats that suggest that there are some umpires who have been pretty poor when it comes to, you know, DRS decisions being overturned regularly compared to other umpires. And over a long period of time, I'm sure that gets them back out of the side. But over a short elite panel. But over a short period of time, it doesn't seem to really impact anything all that much. And I think if umpiring is going to be and I've already said that I think umpiring's at a level that we've never seen before. It's so much higher than it was. If you don't believe me, Roe Belinda, if he has any channels left up, but Roe Belinda's channels are an absolute goldmine of bad umpiring. You know, it's more the Australian kind, but in the 70s and 80s, you saw an absolute ton of it, right? And we have completely improved umpiring, but it doesn't mean that we can't get further. And what they created with this elite panel is very similar to what happened with the England women's cricket team a few years ago, when they basically just decided to make 15 people professional and everyone else amateur. If you do that, you create a system where those umpires will look better than everyone else because they're getting, you know, the best training, the best access, and they're doing the job all the time. But it's very hard for anyone else to become a professional. What really needs to happen is, regardless of nation or board or anything else, umpires should be at the first class and domestic level. The ICC should actually be going around trying to find the next best umpiring talent in the world and create a huge structure of umpiring based very much on what is going on with what, well, at least that sounds like the opening steps of what Cricket Australia are trying to do. The good news is that if you have access to, say, a company like MV Play, who we obviously have a partnership with, but there's heaps of other companies out there like MV Play, you can actually go through all the decisions or non-decisions that umpires go. In fact, cricket boards or the ICC themselves could ask for the people who they have access to this footage from to actually put every appeal and every decision available to them that we can go back and you can have a look at. So you could quite easily have a look at every single domestic umpire in the world for any videotaped game, and let's be honest, almost every career game seems to be taped now. And you could go back and you could have a look at that. And you could get your elite umpires or your training umpires or whatever to actually go through and do that. Separate to that, you could then have situations where you have the ability for an umpire to be dropped from the elite panel or from the, let's say you have structures of the elite panel. You might have the 12 umpires that you trust the most for ICC events and for test matches. Then you might have the tier just below that is for bilaterals and whatever else you may look at. You can have all these different tiers of umpiring and you're consistently looking at it and improving it. This is what a truly international billion-dollar sport should be looking at, right? You can, at the international level, we also have the Hawkeye data to be able to go through all that as well. We have the ability to go through these things. The problem is that umpiring is still stuck in this sort of the early part of cricket professionalism, right? That sort of that interesting point at which we went, oh, we actually have to take umpiring seriously because a bad decision here can cause a big thing. And it's not to say that anything I've said today will stop bad umpiring decisions, right? We see umpires use technology poorly. We see umpires make mistakes. We see umpires sometimes misinterpret the law. We see umpires sometimes forget a law, right? All these things are going to continue to happen. But you will get promoted as an umpire for doing the right thing, and you'll get demoted as an umpire for doing the wrong thing. And also, if it isn't a case of just having the elite panel and then basically going back and umpiring at your country board, it means that, let's say you were an umpire like Nigel Long, who gets to the elite panel and spends 3 or 4 years there, you will obviously be paid more and be used more in international cricket. But then if you start to make mistakes, you go down to that lower level and you'll have the opportunity to work with the people who help you and actually train you back up, potentially get to the other level. But you won't be lost to umpiring, right? You'll still be available to umpire and to do everything else. And I just think that this is one of those things that is almost a no-brainer of where we go with the sport. And there are problems with umpiring and refereeing, you know, right around sport. In the NBA, almost every referee seems to come from like this small part of, I don't know, is it New Jersey or New York or somewhere random? So there are issues with lots of different sports at the major level. But it just seems to me that if we are trying to get better decisions, if we are using technology, and if we are professionalizing all parts of the sport, surely umpiring is one of the most important things that needs to be looked at from here on in. And a lot of this I've talked about here might cost a lot of money. And a lot of this that we've talked about here might actually cricket might not be ready for it emotionally, right? Like sometimes you come up with a really professional idea, like when me and Adam Collins kept talking about the fact you could just use a camera for no balls from side on. We knew that's where cricket would have to go eventually when it comes to no balls, right? There was absolutely no doubt that it was going to go to a system like that, whether it be the foot one in tennis or whether it just be a camera on the ground. No one had any issue with that. Yet when I talked about it, even TV producers would get really angry at me, right? But eventually those things come in. That's what I'm talking about here. But there are also other things I believe that can be used today to fix umpiring issues. And one that really bothers me quite a lot at the moment is what we talked about at the top. We can't talk about umpiring. So the players aren't allowed to mention it, right, at all. And when you ask for a comment from the ICC or from governing bodies about umpiring decisions, they don't talk about it. How is that a better situation? What is made better by hiding something in the dark? Umpires are going to make mistakes. Let's talk about why they made mistakes. Let's talk about whether it even was a mistake, right? Go through the details of it. This is a really tough job. Anyone who's ever played club cricket, who thinks they know a lot about cricket, and they stand up to do umpiring for the first time, suddenly realizes things move really quickly. You have to remember a whole bunch of different things at the same time. You know, counting the ball might sound like an easy thing. It's not particularly easy when the bowler is talking to you, the non-striker is talking to you. There are runs. There's one short. You're not sure if there's a boundary. The LBW law confuses so many different people, right? Umpiring is tough. We have to talk about it. If we don't talk about it and we don't actually try as a cricket community, let's pretend we are one, at actually making something like this better, what is the point? So when there are key decisions in games, I would love to see the ICC or any cricket boards start to go through and evaluate those decisions and talk to them. I think basketball is the only sport I know who does this for sure, but I'm sure there are other sports as well. Sometimes I'll talk about key decisions and they will say things like, yeah, we got that one wrong. Or we actually think we got this one right, but we could see both sides here. Or in cricket, it could be as simple as we think the umpire forgot to look at this part of the footage, or didn't know what to ask for, or didn't ask for the right thing. Or the footage that you're now seeing, I mean, the perfect one is the was it the Sky Catch in the World Cup? We didn't have enough original footage to be able to tell that. It was like, well, a day later when all the mobile phone footage started going viral online that we saw more. Sometimes it would be as simple as that. There was a Cameron Green catch at the Oval, which I think the umpires made a fine decision on what is a very tricky one. But then later there was other footage that came out. For the ICC to come out and go, yes, you're right, there was that footage, but we didn't have that available to us at that time. And in some cases, it might be, an issue with not asking the right questions from a third umpire. In other cases, it might just be that the technology wasn't working the way they wanted to, or that the director didn't offer all the different screens available in front of an umpire, right? It doesn't matter. It could be the same with any decision in a game. There's no reason why we can't have discussions about umpiring. We are in a much better situation when it comes to this. We can fully professionalize umpiring more. And people like Simon Tawfel have done an awfully good job, you know, within the ICC to do this. But Simon Tawfel is kind of like the only person you ever really hear talking about umpiring. So I think it was on Channel 7 that you had him actually being an expert. So many broadcasts around the world now, they have access to umpires and referees and whatever it may be, explaining the decisions, right? And they can still disagree with the final decision is made, but they can go through why. And in cricket, we don't do that. So the broadcasters don't do a great job of actually understanding what the umpires are doing. The umpires themselves are not allowed to talk. And I can tell you, if you get them in a bar, they will talk ad nauseum about all sorts of things, including their mistakes. The ICC don't want anyone to talk at all. How is that a good situation for our sport? I just think there are lots of different things we can do to change umpiring. And I hope the idea of Cricket Australia looking at who's in form, who's actually a good umpire at the moment, is a step forward. Because we've been stuck in this sort of semi-professional element of umpiring for a very long time. This is an incredibly hard job, right? They need support, but they also need all the cricket community working to actually make their decisions better. And at the moment, I think just turning a blind eye and giving a bad decision and never having any discussion about it again, I can't see how that helps cricket at all. All right, I'll have a quick break here and see if there's anything in the comments to add to this. But I'm Jared Kimber, this is the Good Areas podcast. And we'll be doing more sorts of shows like this, just on topics that come to the top of my head, because as you can tell, this one just happened. I read one article and there's just an absolute flood of information that came out of me just there. This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com. We've got no super chats, but we've got a couple of other chats about umpiring, and we'll go into those in a moment. And Jessica says, let's just call this uncovered. Yeah, so we're trying to do more responsive podcasts, as things happen, putting out episodes, and this is one that obviously I saw very, very recently and wanted to get to. We don't really know how the naming is, but the podcast network is changing quite a bit. If you're watching on YouTube, won't really matter. Videos will pop up, you'll watch them. But just if you're listening on the podcast network, things are a little bit different. The Fireball says, Joel Wilson should get a stand in Brian Lara Cricket Academy. So Joel Wilson is one of the umpires that I think I've seen stats on that suggest that he's not a particularly good umpire. I think it's very hard to find umpires in the Caribbean specifically, just because of there's not as much cricket being played in the Caribbean of a high level. They don't play a lot of first-class cricket, for instance. They don't have as many List A games and everything else. So I think it's quite interesting. But the point being is, he might be a fine umpire, right? Where is the full data that we need available to us from the ICC to say whether he's a good umpire or bad? The Fireball thinks he's bad. Many of my friends think he's bad. I'm not a huge fan of Joel Wilson either. But that's not how we should be judging umpires, right? We should be judging umpires not based on a couple of things. I remember I had a conversation a couple of years ago with an Australian fan who told me Alim Dar was a bad umpire. And I was like, and at that stage, Alim Dar was probably on the way down. But he had been umpire of the year 4 or 5 years in a row. And that was based on the quality of his decisions, as far as I'm aware of how the ICC gives that out. Alim Dar was for a long time probably the best umpire in the world, certainly after Simon Tawfel stood down. But he had a horrendous series at one stage in Australia. And so in Australia, he had this terrible reputation. That doesn't make him a bad umpire, right? That meant that he had one bad series. A batter can have a bad series. It doesn't mean that they're a terrible cricketer anymore. And that's kind of the overall point I'm trying to make out of this, which is that there are times when umpires are going to make mistakes. There are times when umpires are going to go through phases where they're not umpiring as well as they are. There needs to be more flexibility for them to go between the top tier and the second tier. And there are probably times when Joel Wilson has been absolutely the quality required for an elite umpire. And there are probably other times when he hasn't. But if there's no second and third division and there's no professionalization of umpires, he's just going to stay in too long. Or worse, if he's a good umpire and he's had a couple of bad years and then he disappears and we never see him again, right? Cricket doesn't work from that. Fireball also says England has a football referee shortage. So there's a lot of this throughout professional sports. Well, sorry, I should say sports in general, that it is very hard to get them. And part of it is, and what the ICC is trying to do by stopping the conversation at the root is like, well, it won't be about umpires anymore. But that's not how it works, right? Fans are still going to complain either or. And to have no information there at all, I don't think is a good way of doing it. But that's why I always say umpiring is a hard job, right? You know, Barrett used to be on the podcast with me. He used to talk about it all the time. It's a really, really tricky thing to learn. You know, I've been playing a few club games this year. I've had to umpire some games. I've done a fair bit of umpiring in my life. And even then, every time I go out there, like the stress of the situation and I'm trying to remember everything that I need to remember on a moment-by-moment basis, then you've just got the decision-making. Because you can do all the other bits of umpiring absolutely perfectly, and the opposition. I had a caught behind in a game where the other team was screaming. It didn't matter. We were going to lose this game by 80 runs, right? Well, I didn't hear it. Now, I don't know if he hit it or not, but I can't give it unless I hear it. But the team, especially the wicketkeeper and the slip and the gully, they obviously did hear a noise. And so in their mind, it was 100% an edge. And so I was somehow cheating. Whereas, of course, if I'd heard it, I would have given it out because it would have given me an earlier afternoon because we're already massively behind in this game. So the point being is that there is no, like umpires are always going to be in that sort of situation. And for all I know, those guys heard a completely different noise that wasn't even an edge anyway. So it is tough. And there are, you know, most levels of cricket that I in the UK seems to not have any sort of level of umpires. So I would say that there's an umpiring shortage in the UK as well. That's why I don't think hiding the conversation on umpires helps anyone, right? And also why I want more professional umpires. So there is more of a reason for people to actually go into this as a job. And Path says, in my opinion, ground umpiring needs to be phased out soon. Technology will get faster and more accurate. So technology will get faster. It's very, very hard to actually, this whole idea, and I've had this conversation with many people before. There are certain things that I think we can do with umpiring that involves more technology. And I also think that because we have technology, international games should be umpired differently. And I've talked about this before with the last ball situation of a game in the LBW and what happens then. So I do think there are times you can use more technology. The problem is that a cricket ground is very, very hard to actually get incredibly accurate information. So, for instance, the reason that we have a camera from the side in cricket and not that sort of beep or not the sort of measurement you got in the long jump at the Olympics is because cricket grounds are not completely flat, right? They're concaved. Is concave the right word? I could have the wrong word there. But it's like an upside down saucer, right? And so because of that, it is very, very hard. On top of that, the ground actually moves the crease line a little bit. So the line doesn't always stay 100% straight. The same with technology when it comes to caught behinds and all this sort of stuff. We need an umpire to actually go through all the different bits of information there and work out that a sound might not actually be the sound because we might be able to see the foot moving at that time. We might be able to see the bat near the flap or whatever it may be of the pad. You actually need on-field umpires to be able to see things. And also when it comes to catches around the field, that's one reason why I had the big problem with the umpire's call going away is it's almost impossible to have a good camera angle of every catch on a cricket field because of the space of a cricket field, right? How many times have you seen a catch go out in the outfield And the person who probably had the best view of it is the square leg umpire. And yet we end up seeing 8 or 9 different replays from areas where the camera angles aren't good. Either the camera's moving, the camera's too far away, there's some sort of, you know, obstruction or the ground, as I said before. Plus you've got foreshortening and all these sorts of things. This idea that we're suddenly just going to have robo umpires, we're light years away from that technology, specifically in cricket. There are some other sports where I think we can get closer to that. But specifically in cricket, I think we are absolutely light years away from that. And the technology required would be very, very hard to even get that. When it comes to umpiring, I do think there's a few different elements that can be fixed. So, Path, the one that I would agree with you is that if we are going to use technology, let's use umpires who are actually trained up correctly in that technology and are using it every day. I'd rather an umpire be a permanent third umpire and be the world's greatest third umpire than what we have at the moment, where we have these umpires who go out on the field and then 33% of their time at the top level, which is way less than that, which I've talked about in other podcasts before, have to go into a booth and work it out. So at best, even the elite umpires are probably 1 out of every 5, one of their jobs is in a booth. I think, honestly, at the moment, more mistakes are made by the third umpires than are made by the umpires on the field. And that's because the umpires on the field, are always available. Have trained up. That's how they got good, right? By being really good umpires on the field. Just a couple of last ones here. Better if I clicked on it. Vignesh says, it will take minimum 3 years to make this possible and competent in all countries. Yeah, it's an investment. There might even be a financial way of making this work, as in there is, we know that the umpires have been sponsored by Emirates before. Is there a way of getting Emirates involved in that so that the overall quality of umpiring goes up? Or the other way of doing it is cricket boards who can prove that they have umpires with really good domestic records and that that footage has been vetted by the ICC, the more umpires that you can produce, perhaps there is, some sort of kickback that you can get for producing umpires of that level that you can invest further into umpire development. You know, whatever that may be, I don't know the full system there. I think there are many different ways of looking at that. Just a couple of other questions. Bannon says, is Steve Buckner as bad as Indian fans claim him to be? So the thing with Steve Buckner is, he's a perfect example of someone who went onto the elite panel when he was clearly an elite umpire. He was one of the best umpires in the world for a period of time. He then stayed on that panel, partly because he was a bit of a celebrity, probably a little bit too long, right? Steve Buckner is a remarkable person. I think has he not umpired and refereed in World Cups of 2 different sports? I think that is the case. But he's a remarkable person. But he umpired beyond his best. And a lot of the umpires, Rudy Kurtzen, I used to give, as a writer, a lot of flack to Rudy Kurtzen. But I think he, again, just umpired a little bit longer than he need to be, right? It's a very, very different situation for anything else. So there's absolutely, in Steve Buckner's case, I think there was a time when he was a world-class umpire, right? A lot of the reason, though, that Indians don't specifically like him comes down to towards the end of his career when perhaps he wasn't a world-class umpire anymore. That's the bit at which you want to move people on. And just the last one here. Abdullah says, is your Discord server public? No, it's not. It's for Patreon. So if you go over to patreon.com/JaredKimber, or I think we're changing that to patreon.com/GoodAreas, but whatever it is at the moment, you'll be able to find the link to the Discord once you sign up on Patreon. But thank you to everyone for popping in. This has been a Good Areas podcast. I am Jared Kimber, and I will be back again very, very soon with, more of this kind of thing, really. More of this kind of thing and more of, other kinds of things. There'll be lots of things. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast. So support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.